Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters, and today is actually June 16th, 2026. 2026. I think the last time I did a program, I gave a completely wrong day. So my attempt to be informative, I ended up being exactly the opposite. So, anyway, a few things I'd like to talk to everyone today about. I think for starters, rather than just focus on the local civic landscape, I guess in a way, I guess I'm going to still do that anyway here, but rather than getting into the political things, there's plenty of time for that. Just wanted to wax just a little philosophically and nostalgically here, on my 40, I think 48 and a half years here living in the city of Cambridge, somewhat precipitated, I guess, by the closure of the SNS restaurants. All right. So when I first came to Cambridge in February of 1978, the very first building I was in was actually we were playing Frisbee, right? Remember these? In the middle of February, when the blizzard of 78 had just finished and the roads were open. It was St. Mary's. It was like a gymnasium. It was at the corner of Prospect and Harvard. It's now offices or condos or something because that's the way things go, right? But back then, it was actually available to us to actually just go in and play, and it was great actually. And it was actually that very first night after I'd moved up to. I was staying in Brookline. I still hadn't found a place to live. Little did I know. I would end up moving just a couple blocks away from that very, very building. But afterwards, we went to Ryle's, which is in Inman Square, enjoyed ourselves. So that was my first real memory of Cambridge. So I found myself just a week or something ago. We went to have, because the SNS restaurant was closing, so we said, let's go over there and have our last fling, the last supper, so as it were, over the SNS. And it was great, really wonderful. The wait staff were wonderful. It was really a great time. I always order more or less the same thing. Very boring that way. I would never make it as a foodie. But it was great. You can't help but. Well, you're sitting in there in a place that's been kind of, it was an institution. It was there for 107 years, only 48 of which did I experience. You can't help but just sort of think back about not only that place, but also some of the surrounding places. So I found myself then and now and today actually just sort of thinking back about some of the things that have come and gone over the years. I guess this is the privilege of being an older guy now, is you can look back at these things. Now, one of the things that was, I mean, the SNS restaurant that I remember initially was not as big as it eventually became. It actually took over several adjacent storefronts and became the SNS, which it was at the time of its closing. But once upon a time, among those was a place called the Inman Square Men's Bar. Right, or the as everybody called it, the Inn Square Men's Bar, which even though it was called the Men's Bar, it always had that very prominent sign on the front window that said "Ladies Invited." Right? So Inn Square Men's Bar, Ladies Invited. And you could go in the inn on the you could enter either on the Cambridge Street side or on the Hampshire Street side. Either way, Inn Square Men's Bar even hosted at least once, probably more than once, some of the competitions of the. Was it WBCN's Rock and Roll Rumble? So I remember actually watching Orchestra Luna play there early on at the Inn Square Men's Bar. My other recollection of the Inn Square Men's Bar was that once upon a time, when I had to go to the laundromat to do my laundry, I would often find myself wending my way to Inman Square, where there was a laundromat, and may still be a laundromat. I don't know. I haven't thought about it. Which was sort of diagonally across from the Inn Square Men's Bar. So I would put my clothes in the washing machines and then walk across the street and have a beer at the Inscrut Men's Bar. So we often refer to that tradition as the suds and suds, you know. So, you know, and then have a beer, go check on your laundry, go back, have another beer, perhaps, right? You know, so these are some of my recollections of Inman Square in those days. Somebody posted somewhere on social media, I think it was like Nextdoor Cambridge or one of those things. Yeah, some just asking people to talk about places they remember which have come and gone. And I, you know, I made a list of some of the things that I remembered that had come and gone. You know, which included the old Woolworths in Central Square. And that too was a place you could, you can't even imagine it today, but you could actually enter on Mass Ave side or on the Bishop Allen side. There was actually a back door to the Woolworths in those days. You know, so it's really kind of something. One of the things that I thought maybe I would do here, I'm sort of navigating a little bit. By the way, part of the other reason why I'm feeling a little bit nostalgic is that steamrollers are going up and down Broadway yesterday and today, doing brand new paving in anticipation of the dreaded bike lanes that they're going to be doing. And you know, and God forbid, but I fear that they will drop those horrible concrete barriers down in the middle of the street, which I'm sure sooner or later will cause some car to go airborne in front of my house. But it's nothing I can do to stop that, because this city doesn't really listen so much anymore. But anyway, so I was sort of thinking about this, and I think maybe what I'll do is I'm just going to, if I can do this competently, just take a little quick stab at this here. So this is a little picture from yesterday of the of Broadway with the steamrollers coming steamrolling in here with the Broadway Bicycle School. By the way, some of the other places that I was thinking back upon from my old, from days gone by, you know, I used to traverse on my bike on Broadway going to and from graduate school at MIT. You know, that was my thing once upon a time. And I remember for a while I actually had darkroom privileges for the Tech, the newspaper for MIT. And I would just bulk roll black and white Tri-X film and go wandering around. And some of the pictures I took actually ended up being valuable to some, including pictures from the old F&T Diner, which was another place in the heart of Kendall Square, which is now is nothing but a plaque left. But anyway, so those are the pieces of the old F&T Diner. Anyway, I didn't want to dwell on the pictures too much, but see, they sort of do complement the nostalgia of the moment here. Back in those days, I remember, you know, because I didn't drive a car, so if I wanted to buy clothing or something like that, I would go to Central Square. And for me, that usually meant the Mass Army Navy store, which was down in around Lafayette Square, you know, part of Central Square, across from the firehouse. Which, and I couldn't even tell you which of the various storefronts it was in there. But it's all different now because, you know, now we've got the big buildings there at Mass and Main. You know, but once upon a time, you know, this was sort of where some of us actually did our shopping for basic goods. One other thing, I mean, I'm sure some of the newer people around here won't believe it, but when I first got here, if I needed to take a subway ride, it was 25 cents, and a bus was 20 cents. And in one of the more curious customs of the day, if you were taking the subway, and then you were going to come above ground out of Kenmore Square, sort of heading out along Commonwealth Avenue or one of the other Green Line branches. You paid 25 cents if you were going to get on the train and get off the train while you're still underground. But if you were getting on underground and then leaving, when you were above ground, you had to have paid 45 cents. So the driver had to kind of remember who paid 25 cents and who paid 45 cents, you know, because that was a bus plus subway in those days. You know, and that was cheaper than what I was used to in New York City, you know. So it was like I felt like Boston, Cambridge area was such a bargain in those days. Because those are also the days where, when I wanted to go to and from New York City, which I used to do frequently, not so much anymore. Standard was you just wandered down to the Greyhound station or Continental Trailways. I think Continental Trailways was down by South Station, and probably misremembering some of this, but I think the Greyhound station was on maybe Dartmouth Street or something, you know, and. So it was just, I think it was like $9 and something, $9.60 to get to New York. And I didn't have any money in those days. I remember one time I actually found money on the ground. I said, oh boy, I can go to New York now. You know, so, you know, kind of real bit of a change in those days. I mean, my life was much simpler in those days. You know, it was just riding my bike around, and I always packed a big stack of Frisbees. It was all nothing but ma before there was civics for me, it was just mathematics and Frisbees. That was kind of a centerpiece of my life. I think it was only actually after I graduated, or le I should say when I took a job, because I actually didn't finish my graduate work at MIT. I did it over a few years later at Boston University, but. They asked me to teach out at Wellesley College, which I did, and that's when I actually got a car and learned how to I learned how to drive in Boston. So that's an adventure. Let me tell you, back in the days when the law used to be for there's a lot of rotaries around here, and it used to be the law had been that you universally always yield to traffic to the right, which meant that if you were in a rotary, you had to yield to traffic entering the rotary, and then they changed the law, but it took probably 5 years or more for people to catch up with the law. So when I was first learning to drive in Boston, going down around the Arnold over Edom and what have you, it was like a dare, you know, who's going to yield to whom whenever you would whether you were in the rotary or entering the rotary. It was really almost, you know, it was a crapshoot as to what you were going to do. I think the standard rule was whoever has the ugliest car gets the right of way because he don't give a damn, right? You know, if you're driving a wreck, the better car is going to yield to you. So that's kind of how it was. I think when I started getting some rust on my old VW Beetle, I think I was pretty much good to go anywhere because they just. Nobody wanted to hurt their car. They said, let the old wreck get wrecked. But when as I was thinking back about this, you know, when I first moved in here in February of 1978, I paid $70 per month as one of four roommates in a first floor apartment in the building in which I still live to this day. But you know, $70 a month, kind of amazing. I mean, I'm saying that to get you Gen Z people angry, but it's just what it was in those days. And that was because I had the small room, right? So it's funny. You know, that was my journey from 1978 to 1985. I ended up buying the building. So if you can imagine the transition of going from a $70 tenant to being a landlord of a three family house with all the associated responsibilities and, you know, learning to keep boilers running and you know, keep roofs patched and do a lot of carpentry work and do all that stuff here. It was quite a transition. You know, but I did settle in here on this block. And it's another thing I found myself doing was I was waxing nostalgically at the SNS and since then. Is just remembering the block on which I live. You know, when I first moved in here, this was considered a kind of a crappy part of town. It's funny because now somebody from work who works for the city said to me, oh, you got such a great location. Well, people didn't really look at it as such a great location at the time. My f early recollections when I lived here was that there was a guy living in a basement apartment, an illegal apartment, who was dealing drugs to all the local ruffians who used to gather across the street at the Longfellow School every night. And I remember coming home more than once, you know, going to walk up the front steps to my house, to where I lived as a tenant. And I had to ask permission of these ruffians, Is it, may I pass, just to go into my own house? That's the way it was back then here in gentrified mid Cambridge back in those days. And every night it was cars gathering across the street at the Longfellow School, where they would pop the trunk, and they'd have coolers full of beer, and people getting pretty wasted. It is an interesting fact, though, that some of those people who were the difficult cases of the day ended up growing up to be pretty known, well-known people like Jimmy Tingle, other people who worked for, in a state senator's office, but once upon a time they were ruffians just like I had been back in New York. It was kind of an interesting transition. But my block then was a very unusual block in that it was a mixed residential commercial. And people may think, oh, that's wonderful urban living. But, places that had once upon been a Chinese laundry and a barber shop and Savvy's Spa was at the corner. It was a spa, not, of course, in New Englandese spa means like a soda fountain in a store, like a corner store. But that had closed, and the because Hubley's Antiques and Auction House was right next door to me. I'm at 366 Broadway. They were 364 Broadway, and they were my neighbors for like at least 3 decades, and or something like 3 decades. We all became pretty good friends, but it's kind of wild living on a commercial block, where instead of an alarm clock in the morning at 8:30 a.m., you can hear the roll-up door behind Hubley's coming up, and that's when I knew it was morning. And I got to know a lot of people who worked there. But the block was an interesting block. There was people back then, after it, all some of the other places had moved out. It had become inhabited by antiques type stores, secondhand furniture, secondhand clothing, and the marketers had dubbed it Antique Row. So when people said, "Where do you live?" I said, "I live on Antique Row, minus the house with the Madonna in front of it." And everybody said, "Oh, well, yeah, I know that house. Everybody knows that house, right?" But we had Hubley's next door, and I could go on and on about Hubley's, but one of the more I don't know, profound things about Hubley's was that a lot of their auctions were from estates. So people had passed away, they did house cleanouts, and then they would set aside some of the really expensive furniture or the first edition books that were left as part of the estate, and those would be sold at annual auctions because of the real high end stuff. But a lot of the ordinary stuff was just sold every Wednesday, the auctions. And they also had rugs. And we used to have the rug guy who used to rather illegally tell everybody, "Don't bid on anything. I'll be the sole bidder. I'll get it cheap, and then I'll sell it to you in the alleyway next to Hubley's," which would be right under my bedroom window, by the way. I'd have to ask him, "Could you guys please take this elsewhere?" But that was just one of the kind of curious features. But one of the sort of more touching thing is at the end of the day, the end of the auctions, there was always the stuff, like I like to think of it as all that stuff that you have in the junk drawer of your bureau, which meant a lot, means a lot to you, but maybe doesn't mean much to anybody else. So often at the end of the day, there would be a cardboard box left out at the curb, just full of all this stuff that were the contents of junk drawers, which are, things which I know were very personal. They were like old photographs and whatever. And I would often just sort of find myself going through there, picking up some of it. So I still have some of the stuff just because, it would be, to me, it was sort of an interesting mystery. Like, who were these people? What was this about here? There's also some interesting kind of small valuable things, silver pens, mechanical pencils and stuff like that. But, yeah, that was just sort of part of life on Broadway for many years. The next house over, which is now the Peace House, it's a Buddhist house, where people come visit, but also people live in there. That was Charlie Shively's house, and it was the first floor is where Gordon Copeland ran a florist shop. It was really the only going business on the street, and it wasn't even a florist shop really, because Gordon really lived in the shop, because he'd kind of separated from Charlie, but he was still just living in the behind a curtain in the storefront. And Gordon used to set a big floppy chair out on the sidewalk in front. He would take off his shirt, and he would be tanning himself during the warm days with his dog, hound dog, sitting there next to him. And it was really quite the sight, have Gordon be sort of a regular thing. So again, I got to know these people. I knew them right up to the day when they passed away. Gordon actually passed away right in the shop, taken care of in his closing days by Sharon Bocelli, who was of SB and Company, who ran her own operation of secondhand stuff and whatever, operating out of the block. Sharon was a wonderful person, still is a wonderful person, living in Vermont. But between that house, which, by the way, the downside of that house, well, I'm not even going to get into the worst part of the downside of the house, but the fellow upstairs actually kept what he used to call barn cats. Just means he had a lot of cats, like 20 some odd cats sometimes. Didn't really clean up after them. And I'll tell you something, in the summertime, it was horrifying. If you have like a hot, humid August day and a house that was filled with cats and you didn't particularly pick up after them, it was pretty horrible. So that was my beautiful block here in gentrified mid-Cambridge. And right next door was Floyd Freeman's place, which is now a vacant space, just grassed over. But Floyd was really probably one, or certainly probably my favorite neighbor of all time. Really smart man, originally from East St. Louis, black man. And he was known, he was like everybody's best kept secret for Brattle people, in that he would do mending of things like china, broken china, and he did a phenomenal job of it, and he charged almost nothing, right? But so we were friends for ages, until maybe it was 20 and change years ago, when there was a fire and his house burnt down and they demolished the whole house, and then he moved out with one of his children out in the Midwest. But it was great, so it was just very messy kind of street in a lot of ways, but through it all, we all sort of knew each other and became friends in this sort of weird co combination of residential and commercial spaces. I think one of the other kind of remarkable constants on the block, I'd have to say, though, was the Broadway Bicycle School, which had once housed trout, the second location for trout fishing in America, and sort of an alternative school of sorts. But then it morphed into the Broadway Bicycle School, which actually happened a little bit before I got here. And they're still operating. It's kind of a interesting anomaly, thanks to George Bossert, who owns the building, who's a good friend. And I think if it weren't for people like George, Broadway Bicycle School probably would have been gone a long, long time ago. But again, sitting in the at the window seat at the SNS, sort of, drifting back about all of this, I got to think about some of my neighbors who have come and gone. Henry Murphy, who was a codger, real old codger, who lived in the back alleys. Used to call him the squire of the alleys. And he sort of, he was a little bit of a busybody, but he was a really good guy ultimately. And so he lived there on Inman Place. My dear friend Allison Woodman lived at the corner of Broadway Terrace and West Street. I'm still driving, when she passed away a few years ago, I bought her car from the estate, and I'm still driving Allison's car. In the triple decker behind me, which was really identical to the building I have here. Patty Curran used to live on the second floor. We were really good friends. And it was interesting. When Patty died a few years ago, I learned something that I had known, which was that, she prior to living here, right behind me, was used to live on Inman Street, and I remember buying some postcards up there. It might have actually been from Patty in those days. I'm not sure. So, and they were selling these postcards that were, made by an artist named Ken Brown. Yeah, so I bought a whole stack of them in here. And what I didn't know is that Patty was actually sort of a muse for Ken Brown. And in some of the postcards, the person who's actually featured, whoops, featured in the postcard is actually my neighbor Patty. So say what you will about this block and all of its strangeness, but there's been life on Broadway here through it all over these many, many years. I should probably also mention my friends Kevin and Jeffrey, Kevin especially, who also a couple of gay fellows who lived in the triple decker behind me, who actually that triple decker was owned by the people who were on Hubley's, and Kevin would work there. In fact, oftentimes the people who worked at Hubley's would actually live in the back building, including Kevin. Some years later, Tim and Susan Corcoran came here, and they opened up the Museum of Unusual Things at the corner in Mark Matz's building, 370 Broadway. Sadly, Tim died very young, but that was a flourishing of the block. It was not no longer just junk shop. We actually had the Museum of Unusual Things, and that was sort of a great addition to the block at the time here. Anyway, but as the years have passed, the gentrifiers have moved in. Instead of people paying $70 a month in rent or what have you, all the triple deckers except mine have become condo buildings, and people bought condo buildings for maybe or individual units for maybe 100 something thousand, in the 80s or early 90s, and now they're selling for like $1 million a piece. And of course, with the gentrifiers also, we had a day where we might not even have a fence between adjoining properties, or if we did, it was just a simple cyclone fence, and you could talk to your neighbors. And as the gentry came, so came the 6 foot high stockade fences, kind of walling off the neighbors, because I think the gentrifiers prefer their glorious privacy to neighborliness oftentimes. So it goes, right? Anyway, so pardon me for waxing on so much here, but the thing is that when institutions like the SNS close and go away, and hopefully another institution will take its place. There's at least some rumor that the family that ran it ran the SNS may be trying to make that happen. I wish them luck. I hope they can. It's been an interesting 48 years living in Cambridge, watching everything change, not only citywide, but certainly right here in my little microscopic piece of the planet on Broadway. And as I speak, their steamrollers are rolling down the street, repaving it, which I suppose you could say it's a good thing. But with that paving, unfortunately, comes some things which are not so. Most of us on the street are not particularly happy about, but there's nothing we can do with the city as it is today.